Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hey, Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and you?
I am just fine. I am actually fixing myself a late night drink.
Really? That's
yeah.
That's kind of a coincidence, as they say.
Yeah, I assume
if
you're doing the same there out in Montana.
Oh, what's that?
I assume you're doing the same out there in Montana.
Oh yeah. I'm although it's not actually late at night out here because it's, you know, I'm both north of you and west of you, so it's still still got quite a bit of sunlight going on here, and it's
really
a beautiful night out. So I'm having myself a plain old bourbon and diet, and enjoying a sunset that is far from plain.
Well, I was noting just the other day that last time we talked, that a cola-based drink is really not a good nightcap because it contains caffeine.
Yeah,
and
well,
I was saying that at the time because I was having something like a rum and coke or the good old Cuba Libre, but I failed to recognize at that point that you seem to always have a cola-based beverage. So for your nightcap, doesn't quite add up, does it?
No, it doesn't, although I typically stay up way too late, which is probably not a surprise.
Maybe it's because you're drinking all those cola-based beverages.
Yeah, it could be.
But
and it could also be because, you know, you can waste hours upon hours playing World of Warcraft and not even notice.
I wouldn't know, but I've been told.
Yeah.
It's ironic, too, considering my graduate degree is in something that has now become a games program.
What do you mean?
The program where I got my graduate degree, my Master of Science, was just getting started when I got in there.
Yeah, it was the first year, wasn't it?
I was in the very first year. It's a 2-year program. I was in the very first cohort of people, and the program was somewhat unformed at that point, or not fully formed. It was taking form, taking shape, at such time as well, evolving. And we had a great deal of latitude to kind of construct our own, find our own direction, which was good and frustrating at times, but good. Now it has kind of evolved and grown a bit of an identity. I mean, that was over 10 years ago, right? So it has taken on an identity, and that identity is, and that focus is games. It's all about games.
Wow, that's kind of surprising.
It's ironic. Yes, it's ironic considering that I have a degree from that program and I really don't know the first thing about these computer games. I really don't.
Yeah. Do you have like an Xbox or a Wii or anything like that?
No, if I did, then I would have to say that I know at least something about them. But the truth is, I don't, and I don't.
Wow.
So I am ignorant in that regard.
Yeah.
That is a whole, a whole cosmos of entertainment of which I am ignorant.
Yeah, well,
I don't know anything about it.
It's kind of a sign of our generation. We're really the last of generations that just really didn't think of video games as a central part of the entertainment culture, you know, that at least in our 20s, you know, like I don't know about you, but I played my share of Atari games when I was a kid. My parents had an Atari console, but then it was one of those things where after I got out of junior high or high school, maybe that just seemed like kid stuff to me, and it was. But soon thereafter, there were consoles that came out that appealed to slightly older people. And, you know, one of the things that was kind of a surprise to me here in Missoula was realizing that the generation of people just younger than me not, you know, maybe 4 years and younger than me, grew up weaned on these things and never left them. So, and I've certainly caught the bug myself in my adult years. Day, my wife bought an Xbox a few years ago for Christmas. And even up until just a couple of months before she bought that, I swore up and down that I had no interest in it, you know, was not intrigued at all, and, you know, considered it a waste of time, which I still do, but it's a waste of time that I'm willing to engage in because I enjoy it, so I guess it's not entirely wasted.
Well, sometimes it's necessary to waste some time. But I feel a little bit different than you did because I think that, it's, you know, I read about these games and so forth and
mm-hmm.
have trends in the industry and so forth, and it all sounds rather fascinating to me.
Yeah.
I just have never taken the plunge, and who knows? Maybe I never will. But I wanted to tell you, I'm surprised that we're discussing this subject because I am just, just coming off 3 days of
mm-hmm.
an amazing experience here in New Orleans that I
yeah.
just have to tell you about, which is
yeah.
the Tales of the Cocktail.
Right. I read about it on your blog.
What? You read my blog?
Yeah, I read it every day.
I am fascinated. Humbled.
Well,
thrilled?
There you go.
I don't know, something. Anyway, so you know then that for the past 3 days I've been attending this festival of mixology, and I'm pretty much done with it, even though the event continues for 2 more days, Saturday
mm-hmm.
and Sunday. I'm done because I just can't. I can't go over the weekend. I've got other things that I have to do, blah, blah, blah. I really didn't expect to be attending this thing at all. But,
uh-huh.
Because, you know, it always kind of sneaks up on me. I think I mentioned that. I always find myself otherwise obligated. But this time I marked it in my calendar well in advance, only when I started getting here, getting close to time to actually pony up, I started looking at the ticket prices and realized, wow, I don't think I can afford to go to this thing. It's a little bit expensive. I was daunted by the price of the seminars.
Uh-huh.
It's like an a la carte kind of thing. You buy your way into whatever you want to get into.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, thinking, I guess I'm just going to have to sit it out once again. The seventh annual one, and I'm and right here in New Orleans. And it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart, not
mm-hmm.
to my liver. And
right.
I'm not going to go. So I wrote a really pathetic, it seemed to me like a pathetic email, more or less begging, unseemly begging to be let in, as, you know, basically I asked, do you grant press access? You know, I'm sure they did. Would you grant press access to somebody with non-mainstream press credentials? Such as myself, I don't work for a newspaper, unlike you.
Uh-huh.
I really don't have any mainstream credibility. I was able to say that I'm the host of a long-running underground cult TV show, which focuses on mixed drinks.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I've got this blog, and you know, it's just a personal blog, and I'll write about this in my blog and. They gave me a press pass.
Well, there you go.
That was one of those things where they it doesn't grant any special access really to the seminars or, you know, all the I guess the serious media or whatever maybe snatched those up or somehow. So it was kind of like I could get standby passes if I begged for them
mm-hmm.
to get into some of these things if there was room. And they're usually
is
wild.
It really that big a deal that there needs to be standby at some of these seminars?
Oh yeah, it's amazing. I've got a friend who works there, and has worked there for a few years now, first as a volunteer and now as a paid staffer, I guess. Because, you know, to pull a big event like this off, they have to have a bunch of people who are employed for a very short time.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he has worked there, and he was really kind of amazed at the ramp up in access control that was implemented this year, where they have like everybody when they get their ticket to a seminar gets a barcode, and then when you go in to the event, they have somebody at the door scanning barcodes to let people in.
Well.
And anyway, I attended a number of seminars that were, seemed like a couple hundred people in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of them presumably paying $40 per or whatever. And, oh, did I mention that in all these seminars they serve mixed drinks?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the greatest conference ever.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, you know, you go into conference at 10:30 a.m. and boom, here's a cocktail. And here's a couple more. They're thematically related to what we're talking about. It was just amazing. But, I mean, you can see that it's not trivial just to throw open the doors and let anybody come in.
Mm-hmm.
It would kind of create a problem.
Yeah. Because there'd probably be a lot of bums.
Not in New Orleans.
Oh.
Not in the French Quarter. There's no alcoholic vagrants in the French Quarter.
Really? Oh, okay. That's good to know. So did you learn anything? Did you glean anything? Did you, like, feel like you had
a
spiritual connection to the things that get you drunk?
I learned a lot. Of course, one of the things that I would say that I learned was that I'm a utter freaking bumpkin when it comes to the world of mixology. I mentioned the Cuba Libre earlier. I'm actually having a good old Cuba Libre right now. That was the only drink that was mixed or really even mentioned in any of the events that I went to that I've actually made myself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, everything else was pretty, you know, pretty sophisticated. there were no gin and tonics.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously gin and tonic is a fine drink. I'm sure that many people would agree, but pretty easy to make in its basic form and so forth. Not much of a challenge. This is an event that draws, you know, practitioners of the craft from around the world. It's a tough audience, I suppose, there was a lot of I had a lot of drinks that were much more subtle in terms of the palate that they presented. I certainly realized that that what we did with our TV show, Rocks, and in particular what you did with your shtick as a bartender, is really it really is kind of it's very punk rock, you know, in terms of the whole kind of, hey, you don't have to have any fancy schooling to be a bartender or to mix a drink. It's fun. Let's just do it and videotape ourselves doing it and so forth. I mean, it's the same ethos that informed the show that kind of informed your mix craft.
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, I think that you're right.
You
I thought I had something to say there.
I don't know what you could say.
Yeah.
In one regard, of course, it kind of makes me wonder. I mean, I'm not into going to fancy bars that serve fancy cocktails as a rule. I'm pretty turned on when I can get a decent cocktail at a bar. Actually, I'm usually pretty surprised. New Orleans has not been known, you know, nationally or internationally as a place to go and get, you know, great mixed drinks. Lately, it's been more of, you know, let's go to New Orleans, get drunk, and, you know, take your top off or whatever, and just,
right.
you know, utter debauchery has been the kind of reputation that it's had. But recently, there have been a few venues apparently that have opened here where they're really shining the spotlight on some excellent bartenders, just like in some other cities. I guess this is a hot and happening trend around the country,
uh-huh.
if not the world. The people are rediscovering the art of mixed drinks, which is kind of lost over the years with all the there are all these conveniences that were built in. I think one of the classic things that people like to cite is the little the shotgun device on a hose, you know, where you
touch
the button, you get a little bit of this or a little bit of that and so forth. And of course that's utterly anathema to the cutting edge mixologist of today. Because they're getting back to basics in a lot of ways. So that's what I thought the saving grace of all of this hoopla is the tradition and culture that it's built on, that a lot of this stuff we were talking about today, in particular the seminars that I attended, were about the history and tradition and culture.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
For example, in New Orleans, the connection between jazz and cocktails in Storyville, the kind of sanctioned red light district that was used to be here in New Orleans. You know, there were apparently districts where prostitution thrived like you just wouldn't believe, all over the country, in every city, every major urban area. But in New Orleans, this was the place where it was actually sanctioned by law in a particular zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that zone is also credited for, you know, giving birth to jazz and perhaps cocktails. It all seems to be wrapped up with prostitution.
Wow. Well, that's good to know. And yet there's no prostitution anymore, right? I mean, that's completely all gone, right?
It's kind of like with the alcoholic vagrants that we were talking about. There's none of that here.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well,
the world is
pretty
better.
Awesome. I'm pretty exhausted, I've got to tell you. From all, even though the portions that were served, not only did they serve cocktails in the seminars, but then you could go to these tasting rooms that were sponsored by various manufacturers, various what do you call people who make spirits? When you call a person who makes wine a vintner, but anyway, distillers,
yeah.
I guess, or something like that, and they would have cocktails there, and all most of these cocktails were being served in thimble-sized portions, but still they do add up. And when you have a dozen or so spread over the course of a day,
mm-hmm.
it does kind of tend to have an impact on your whole body. And so I was pretty exhausted yesterday. It was a pretty full day. Today I went for a session in the morning. I rode my bike back home and had lunch here, and then rode my bike back to the hotel for a second session and just called it a day.
Well, yeah. And how many mixed drinks would you say you had today?
Oh, today probably only six. Let's see. Yeah. Three in the morning, three in the afternoon. Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah. Anything good?
Yeah, started off with a parlor punch, which was supposedly a classic old-time cocktail that might have been served in a Storyville brothel. It was garnished with raspberries, which I found a little hard to believe it would be authentic.
Raspberries?
Which was nice. We also had in that session on the on Storyville I'm drawing a blank on the name. Jack Rose? A Jack Rose, I think? And a cocktail I'd never heard of before. Actually, I had heard of only the day before, And finally, we had a Ramos Gin Fizz. It's actually the second Ramos Gin Fizz that I've had there. And I've come to understand that the Ramos Gin Fizz is one of the most famous drinks, apparently, in the canon of mixology. It was invented by a guy, Henry Ramos, who lived here in New Orleans in the latter part of the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a variation on the old Gin Fizz. You know, New Orleans just recently designated as its official cocktail. I don't know how many cities in the country even have an official cocktail, but New Orleans does. And it is the
wow.
Sazerac, of course.
Yeah.
And you're familiar with that. But
yeah.
The guy at the session today said, you know, if the city could have two, it should be the Ramos Gin Fizz, because it's such a distinctive drink. And, you know, it's got the egg whites and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And was it distinctive?
Yeah, it was foamy and good. I think you'd have liked it. So then, like I said, I ran home for lunch, went back, and discovered that there was, I had a little time, so I visited one of these tasting rooms. There was this one with a French ginger liqueur. It's Domaine de drawing a blank. Anyway, it was quite tasty, and they had also a cooking demonstration where they made some scallops and some coconut sorbet with this stuff.
Oh, wow.
And that was quite good as well. Then I went up to a session on the history of Cuban rum, which I thought was going to be a broad overview of the history of many different rums of Cuba. But, in fact, it was really the history of Bacardi. And we talked. I've got to tell you, my interest and respect for Bacardi was amplified greatly by this, because it really is a fascinating story that they have. Way back to, 1862 and so forth. So a lot of interesting stuff. We had there a Bacardi cocktail, which is possibly the only cocktail that's had a lawsuit around it. The controversy was that some places in New York were serving Bacardi cocktails. That's the name of the drink, the Bacardi cocktail. But they weren't using Bacardi rum. And so the Bacardi company sued them and prevailed.
Wow.
And so, yeah. So if you're going to advertise that you're making a Bacardi cocktail, you'd better be using Bacardi rum by law.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And we also had
a daiquiri. The man.
Yeah. We also had a daiquiri, which the classic daiquiri. The daiquiri and the mojito both were invented using Bacardi. And,
well,
you know, Hemingway was a huge Bacardi aficionado. Which is appropriate that we would mention, of course, Hemingway, because the running of the bulls just happened in Pamplona. And you may have seen in the news that a guy got killed by a bull.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a shock.
Well, you don't sound shocked. But so I'm going to take that in stride. And just mention that tomorrow morning, by the time anybody hears this, of course, it will be passed. But tomorrow morning is the, I think, third annual running of the, I guess they call it the running of the roller girls here. You know, we have a chapter of roller derby here in New Orleans, the Big Easy Roller Girls. And do I hear ice?
Yeah, I'm moving on to another drink.
That
I mean, whenever roller girls come into the conversation, I have to have another drink.
Yeah, well, I think I'll join you in that. But they've started doing this thing every year, which is the running of the roller girls, where the roller girls run through the or skate through the streets of the French Quarter, chasing people dressed with the red bandanas and stuff. And it's just like the running of the bulls in Pamplona, except instead of bulls, it's roller derby girls.
Do they try to, like, impale them on their breasts or what?
No, they use brooms or plungers, maybe. I forget exactly what they use. They do something. Apparently, it's like a fantastic thing to behold. I've never participated.
I think you need to be there.
I'm kind of thinking that someday, maybe, if they keep going with it, maybe in 10 years or so, I'll make my way down there.
Right on. Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm all for it. It's just that, I have friends who were there for the very first year, and that would have been the time to be there, right? That would have been super cool. And now, of course, it's like Johnny come lately. What am I going to bring to the table? If we were making an episode of Rocks, for example, if we were making an episode of Rocks, I would bring a video camera to the table.
Right.
And so forth. If we were doing this show live, like if I could manage to call you that early in the morning, because it's apparently at the crack of dawn, which would be before dawn out where you are, then I could call you on the phone. And you could hear me being chased down by a roller girl. That'd be pretty exciting.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do that tomorrow morning.
Yeah, well.
I've got my book club tomorrow morning.
Oh. That's a lot more cultured than a roller derby girl thing.
Well, maybe, I guess. You know, it all depends on... Yeah, by culture, of course, you mean high culture.
Sure.
Yes,
or something
indeed.
Like it.
So anyway, Tales of the Cocktail.
Yeah.
Seventh annual, Tales of the Cocktail 2009. I would advise you to, you always were complaining about the fact that it's in July in New Orleans, that it would be sweltering hot and absolutely unbearable and so forth. So there's a couple of things that I would like to advise you of, and that is, one, that this time of year has generally been viewed as the dead season for tourism in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
This is generally deemed to be the event that has proven that false, because
like
I said, people are coming here from all over the country, from all over the world, to participate in the, the paying customers coming to this thing from all over. So apparently. That is no longer a hard and fast rule. Things can succeed in the summer in New Orleans. And that, I mean, seriously, that's big news here. And the other thing is that air conditioning. The hotel is air conditioned, and it's all rather cool.
Oh, well, go figure.
Yeah, so anyway, I would mark it on your calendar for next year, and you need to find a way to get your employer to send you here.
Right, exactly. That's the big trick. Because the other issue that always comes in the way is money.
Money, yes, money. I was afraid you were going to say that.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, and plus you're not the food and drink editor, so, or writer, or whatever.
Right.
So it might be a bit of a stretch.
Right, exactly. But, who knows? It's I didn't think that I would be going to China on the company dime last year, and I did that. So, stranger things have happened.
Maybe somebody who's listening to this show would sponsor you.
Yeah.
But it does raise so many questions.
I will do that. Well, it seems that we're sort of winding down, and it looks like we're at about a half an hour, which is, I think, the length of conversations that we were aiming for here, although we rarely achieve that.
We should wind down and call it a night. I think we've said all that needs to be said.
Yep.
Except that I have a rabbit.
And,
looking at a rabbit right now.
Oh, yes, there's the rabbit. I heard you got a rabbit. Saw it on the blog, in fact.
It's an embarrassment to
an
all
embarrassment.
Of us.
Oh, come on. Rabbits
yeah,
are cute.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, the rabbit is cute, but the embarrassing part is that we didn't really want a rabbit, and yet we have one. We kind of got through a series of misunderstandings.
Yeah.
But now that we have it, yes, it's very cute. It's part of the family. We've named it Nicholas after that after children's book, I Am a Bunny.
That's a good book and a good name, you know.
Yeah. All right, Jay. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
You as well.
Give my love to the wife and kid.
And you as well. And I will talk to you soon.
Take care.
Righto. Bye.